Hey guys, welcome back to the Marble Halls podcast. This is episode 3. It's been a while since the last one. And I'm joined by a moderately special guest on my right. Ooh, wow. You've upgraded, Julian.
Wow. Okay.
How are you, Julian? Welcome to the podcast. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see me as well.
Good to see you as well.
I'm very, very impressed to be moderately special.
Moderately special.
Getting there.
You've had an upgrade. Do you want to introduce our guest today, or do you want me to introduce our guest?
I'll allow you.
Okay, I will then. So on my left here, we've got Matt Reed, who was mentioned somewhat in the last episode when we spoke to Keith Edelman about a case which he was involved in, which we'll go into a bit more detail later on. But Matt, thanks for joining us. We're really glad that you could be here. We know you've got quite a few interesting stories about being an Arsenal fan, which we're very, very happy that you're here to share with us. So yeah, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, nice to meet you.
Good, glad to have you here. So something which we like to start the podcast off with, which by this time I know Julian's answer, is who is your favourite all-time football player? Doesn't necessarily have to be Arsenal.
But it does have to be Arsenal.
Okay, it doesn't have to be,
There's only one player, and it's Dennis Bergkamp.
Yes.
By Street.
There you go. 1-0. 1-0 on Julian's side. You've kept him happy. why Dennis Bergkamp? I mean, obvious reasons, but why specifically?
Because he was the best player that's ever played for Arsenal. He's the best player I've ever seen. Yeah, other people have seen like Maradona 3 times and Georgie Best 2 times or whatever, and they say they're the greatest player, but Bergkamp was worth the money every time you went in to watch the game. He'd done something special in every game. Top player.
Julian, you had something about Dennis Bergkamp that I think you mentioned to me. What was it that you wanted to mention?
Oh, yes.
You have
did,
a little
I,
story?
Did I really want to mention that?
Oh, it's up to you. Do you want to mention it?
I had a girlfriend who lived next door to Dennis Bergkamp.
Okay.
Yes, that was her claim to fame.
Oh, was it?
Yes, was her claim to fame. It was the only time, I have to say, in all my years that I've ever cried when I've split up with a girl. That on the Sunday, she was invited with guest to Bergkamp's surprise 30th birthday, and I was the guest, and she dumped me on the Friday.
Which is quite understandable.
Yes, but she could have at least waited till the Monday.
Yeah,
oh, God.
I did try and convince her that we could go as friends, but she decided that we weren't friends and that I couldn't go.
Oh, sorry to hear that, Julian.
Yeah, it was a very dark day for me.
You're obviously done something very bad.
I got caught for something very bad.
Okay.
But yeah, I used to have fantasies of playing football in the back garden and kicking the ball over the fence and going over and knocking on Dennis's door and saying, oh, can I have my ball back? And him saying, yeah, sure. Do you fancy a kick around? And it was me and Dennis in the back garden. And then I woke up and I was dumped.
Well, it's funny because I used to sit behind a guy at Arsenal who lived next door to Dennis Bergkamp.
Okay.
And when we left,
he wasn't a financial advisor, was he?
It could well have been.
Yeah, that was her dad.
Yeah.
I was never so enthusiastic to meet a girl's dad before.
When we left left Highbury, he got me 4 shirts signed.
Okay.
To the home and away of the last season at Highbury and the home and away of the first season at the Emirates.
Yeah.
And I've still got,
now that was not something I was expecting to see a connection in this early on in the podcast.
It's
amazing.
It sounds like it's the same guy. I mean, I remember what my dad said after we finished, or after she finished with me. He said, that was the ugliest girl you've ever brought home. My counter to that was, it just goes to show how deep I am, that I don't just judge on looks.
Oh, that's nice, Julian. That's very kind.
Obviously
cuddy.
She doesn't either. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm good looking.
A question that I have for both of you is kind of about, and I don't really have any experience of this, is there was obviously quite a lot of violence at football matches back in the 70s, 80s. Do either of you have any kind of like memories of what that was like?
Do you want me to start?
I mean, either. I mean, it's a question for the floor.
Yeah. I have to say that, weirdly enough, it's come back to bite me in a few weeks. I'm taking advantage of the international break. Usually I go away. I go abroad on the international breaks. this international break, I'm having to have a nose job to fix an injury, thanks to some Millwall fans many years ago that I never got corrected. It wasn't a very brave story because I didn't actually get thumped by any. I actually ran away and ran straight into a lamppost and broke my nose. But it was part of going to football.
Yeah.
Part of going to football was the threat of violence that could happen at any time. Mm. I had countless experiences of it. But that one actually got me, or the lamppost did.
The lamppost did.
Yeah, well, I suppose I can remember, because I'm a little bit older than you, and I mean, a
little bit,
not much.
No.
I don't look at it anyway. But yeah, I mean, we ice cup, and a day out. Bearing in mind, when I was from a council estate, I mean, I was sort of with a single parent family and all that stuff, and I was a bit. I would say I was probably my mum's favourite, so she let me get away with quite a bit, you know what I mean? And I used to shoot up and go and watch the Arsenal, and my day was to leave at about 7 in the morning and go to the Golden Goose at King's Cross with all the other Arsenal Herberts and sort of wait for the away fans to come in and have a little scrap there and then leave there and come back, and you had to make sure you got into the North Bank early, because in them days you had to defend your end, as it were. And so, because the away fans will come in and try to take your end.
Mm.
And I don't think I ever got to the hierarchy, because I probably stopped doing that when I was about 17 and started working at Arsenal selling merchandise. I mean, That and after the game, you go down to Trafalgar Square and see if you could find someone else to have a little scrap with.
Busy day then.
But I just thought, yeah, I'll just join in with the boys, you know.
sounds like a busy day. Were you involved at all, Julian?
I remember talking to someone.
Were you just attacking lampposts?
No, I was attacking lampposts, obviously. I remember talking to one of the, what did you call them? The hierarchy. And I told the guy that I'd done karate. I'd been doing karate for 2 years, which was true. What I failed to mention was that I'd only been twice in those 2 years, and he tried to recruit me, at which point I didn't turn up for my first training session.
Oh, God.
Because my mum wouldn't let me.
Oh, God.
Training session?
Yeah.
At what?
I don't know, probably running away.
No, we didn't have training sessions. You just went, you just followed the crowd and just enjoyed it.
Whatever it was,
enjoyed the moment.
My mum wouldn't let me go, so that was my fleeting moment with football hooliganism.
You mentioned selling merchandise at Arsenal. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how that started and what you did when you were working, selling merchandise?
I was an apprentice gas fitter, and I might have met a guy who was mentioned in the director's interview, a guy called Michael O'Connell. I met his brother, and I said, "Do you fancy doing a bit of work at Arsenal?" He said, "I know you're an Arsenal fan." And I thought, that's a nice way of burning. Because when I was a kid, I used to go up there and sit outside the stadium and ask people if they had a shilling so I could get in. And I used to go up there with nothing and go home with about 10 bob, you know what I mean? So, do you know what 10 bob is?
I don't, to be honest.
I don't even know what 10 bob is.
10 shillings, I don't know.
It was 50p.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was a lot of money in those days.
It was
a good day out.
It was a good day out. But so I used to do that and used to get into the stadium, and then, like you say, you had enough money to get the train home or whatever. But, and anyway, being an apprentice, like I say, he was only on about £6 a week or whatever it was. So I said, I went and worked for him on one occasion, and then I turned up on the next occasion, he didn't have anything. He said, "Oh no, I got nothing for you." And went the next time, he said, "I got nothing for you. So if you let me down again, I'll start on my own." He said, "You wouldn't start on your own." And went up again, and he had nothing. So the following game, me and my mate, called Mickey Clark, went into a place called Copper Sports with £40. And
started up on your own?
Started up on my own. When I turned up, he weren't too pleased with me, and I think his dislike for me carried on for quite some years. In fact, I think it ran into the Arsenal case years, and I always felt that he had a connection with Arsenal, because there were photos of my stall and things which were taken from his stall, as it were,
from that angle,
which showed different items that were for sale, that I had up for sale, which caused me issues. So all of my thoughts that he might have been, let's say, doing the dirty deed on me, all came flooding back when I watched the interview with the director saying that Michael O'Connor was involved with Arsenal, because I started trading when I was 17, and then things moved on, and then when this Arsenal thing kicked off.
So what exactly, just for context for people that who may not know as well, what exactly kind of happened? So you'd sell, I guess, what kind of items? Scarves?
Scarves, hats, flags, pennants, t-shirts, badges. All the things that people would buy on an instant. It wouldn't save up for. I mean, because it's pointless. Mm. I mean, it would have been nice to have had the club shirts, but funnily enough, I mean, in the early days, I don't think you could have given a club shirt away. You know, I mean, no one wore them.
Mm.
It's more of a modern era thing. But obviously now it's the biggest selling thing, the biggest money making thing. But
so you'd have a stall outside, well, Highbury at the time.
Yeah, well,
was it always outside Arsenal Station? Have you always been there?
When I first started, we always used to stand there with a box and board. I don't know if you remember that those days, but it's what you had. You had a board and it had a stick, and you used to hang a box over it.
Okay.
So on the board, you had all your badges and rosettes, and you had a few scarves, and you had scarves hanging over the box. And at Arsenal, the rule was the first person who arrived had the number one spot.
Okay.
And like second, third, whatever. And we used to get up at like, we used to get there at 3 o'clock in the morning to make sure that you got the number one spot. Yeah, and that's what I did for years. And then in 1979, this guy from Manchester turned up about 11 o'clock, walked straight to the front, started selling us. I went, "Hey, mate, you best get to the back." And he went, "What are you talking about? I ain't doing it." I said, "Mate, that's the way it is here." Anyway, we started arguing, and as it worked out, the chief of police for the day was there, and he went, "What's going on here?" I said, "Well," I said, "he's turned up." I said, "And we've got a rule here: the first person that turns up gets the first spot," and the other people go to the back. He said, "Oh, so you're running it here now, and not me." I went, "Well, no." I said, "But that's how it works." He said, "Well, you and you get to the back." So he sent us to the back, and I thought, well, I ain't standing at the back. So I went and knocked on the door on the corner and asked them if I could work in their garden. And they said, "Well, it ain't our garden." He said, "Well, we rent it. The bloke who owns it lives in Canby Island, which is like 10 minutes from me." So the next day I went down to see him, and the rest is history. I started off with a little stall with, well, it wasn't a stall, it was like two A-frames with a bit of wood in between and scarves hanging over it and pennants at one end and a few bits at the other end, and that's how it started. And then it sort of built up from there.
So that was, you said, 79, did you say? So from then till Arsenal left Highbury, you were selling that same...
I'm still there.
Still there.
Still there now?
Still in the same spot. Yeah.
Wow. So that's, I mean, I'm not very good at maths, but almost 50 years? Almost? 45 years?
Yeah.
Wow, it's a long time.
It's a long time. Yeah,
it's a long time.
Yeah, I started. I started working at Arsenal 52 years ago.
Wow.
I went, like, so when I started, there's all you could do was buy a basket, a bobblehead, and a rosette, and a comb, maybe. Yeah,
a comb.
Yeah. They did little Arsenal combs, and we had a club shop. The club shop was run by Jack Kelsey. You don't remember Jack Kelsey?
He was a goalkeeper.
Yeah,
was he a goalkeeper? And run the club shop.
He was a great goalkeeper, wow. But he ran the club shop.
That was afterwards.
Okay, I was going to say he was doing a dual role.
The club shop was 12 foot by 12 foot. You know, I mean, or whatever. I've been 15 foot by foot, but it was tiny. And it was just, you walked in there and you wouldn't have even known it was a club shop.
Was that the one at the clock end?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. According to my dad, Jack Kelsey was the best Arsenal goalkeeper he'd ever seen.
Of all time.
Yeah, he started going in the 40s.
What's the best-selling item? Scarves, I assume? Or has it changed every time?
Scarves are the best-selling item, yeah.
Is it the 50-50 scarves these days?
Well, yeah. I was probably the one who introduced those at Arsenal, you know? Yeah, I mean, I remember having a meeting because we were selling them, obviously, before all this crap. And with the when the case was sorted out, finalised, I mean, there was a guy called John Hazel there, was a good, yeah, a nice fella. And but then this guy, forgot his name. What was his name? Anyway, I've forgotten his name. But anyway, I phoned him up and said, like, should we have a meet? Because my lawyer had made this arrangement with Arsenal.
Should we talk about this this case, kind of go back to the start of how it all
Well, if I go back about. To the start, I mean, it didn't really start with Arsenal.
Okay.
It all started years before that with Essex Trading Standards. Because this is what happened. First of all, is what happened was a bunch of security guards, for want of a better word, came around called Stargard, and they came around saying that we were infringing trademarks, which we weren't. You know, it was all before they trademarked it.
Okay.
And I was saying, you know, we're infringing trademarks and we're going to confiscate your goods. And they tried to confiscate some people's goods, and there was some people give it to them and other people told them where to go. And then I was away in Portugal playing golf, and I got a phone call from my wife at about 7:30 in the morning saying she was crying, and I got my daughter in the background crying, and saying these people from the Trading Standards had turned up and they had come in the house and took all my paperwork out of my office and cleared out my factory, which was at the back. And they took everything, stuff, plain stuff, plain T-shirts, printed T-shirts, everything. And fortunately enough, I had a van parked out the back, which had my Arsenal stuff in it, and they never even knew that was there. So at least I would go to work when I come home. But I took everyone out of the unit. And we had this case run with Essex Trading Standards, and I was talking to the guys at a later date, and they said, well, it was either a London club, he said, or Manchester United. I don't know why he chucked Manchester United in there, because they wouldn't even know who I was. And it was obviously Arsenal, you know, a tip-top Essex Trading Standards, hoping that they would finish me off. Because is what happened prior to that. I was probably the only one that stood up to them and was carried on trading from the beginning, and others vanished and went elsewhere. And anyway, we beat Essex Trading Standards, and within days, Arsenal sent me papers, and that's when the Arsenal case started.
So you, as you say, you were selling scarves, you were selling hats. Is this something, I mean, assume with the Arsenal badge on them?
Yeah, we sold everything with the Arsenal badge on them. And obviously the paperwork said we're infringing trademarks. And I said, there isn't a trademark. No, there is no trademark with regards to Arsenal. I mean, if you put a Nike tick on, it's like, you believe Nike made it. I said, but if you buy a scarf with Arsenal in it. You don't believe Arsenal made it. You buy it because you support Arsenal. So it's not a trademark. It's a badge of allegiance. And that was our argument. And it ran, as you know, for 5 years.
So when did this start? Sorry, I'm just trying to get a timelines as well. So this, you say...
Well, it started in... it was about mid to early 90s that you had the thugs come around, like trying to get nick your stuff.
Yeah.
But obviously they weren't going to take mine. And that when they fouled, you had Essex Trading Standards. And then after that, you then had the Arsenal case, which started in about 99, something like that.
It's quite a long time frame, and this will kind of happen. Lots of things.
Mate, it was a long time frame, and it was our work, you know what I mean? You've got to think, I'm fighting like the Essex County Council, then I'm fighting the might of Arsenal.
Mm.
They could have done it in a different way. They could have talked about it and come to some arrangement, but they didn't. They just came in. Obviously, they hit me with the Essex Trading Standards, and then the next time it was bang, we don't want you working. You're not working. And I think the only reason anybody worked at Arsenal was because I was fighting this trademark thing. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been any trade in Arsenal. Yeah. Obviously, you had the O'Connors who managed to get in with the council.
Did they also have a stall? Is that?
They had a stall, they managed to get in with the council, Arsenal, and the police, and they had apparently... I was talking to one of them because one of them done a dirty on the others, and as those people would do, you know what I mean? It's greed. But and he took the prime council sites. I mean, I wasn't even offered a council site, bearing in mind I've been there for donkey's years and I'd applied for one, but I never even got a letter saying.
So you need like a license effectively sell at that point.
Like on the streets rather than in the gardens.
Okay.
That's how they got all these sites. And I've lost some train of thought. Well,
no, just trying to see how the case started, how it went from selling like a 9-year period, 10-year period almost, and then you're in a case with Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, then the case just ran on. We went, as you're aware, it went to the county court, then on to the high court. We beat them in the high court. So then went on to the European court.
Wow.
And then the European court found, but they found on their facts rather than the facts of the case. So it went back to the high court.
Okay.
I won again in the high court, and then they appealed and it went on to the court of appeal. I lost in the court of appeal. So we were going to go to the House of Lords.
Wow.
So we put it to the House of Lords, and the barristers believe, and pretty much everybody in law believe, that it would be accepted by the House of Lords. Everyone except my solicitor, and he done a deal behind my back with Arsenal, which apparently you can do if he believes it's in my best interests.
Okay. I wouldn't know on the law.
No, but it obviously wasn't in my best interest because I didn't want it. I made it clear, as clear could be, coming back from the Court of Appeal, that I was not going to do a deal. But he kept on saying, well, can I test the water?
Mm.
I said, you can test anything you like. I said, but I'm not doing a deal. And unfortunately, he done a deal. First of all, apparently, he offered Arsenal $50,000 without asking me to drop it and to pay their costs, which obviously I couldn't do that. Yeah, you know what I mean? And I don't know why he said that, because I think the reason he done the deal was because I owed him over $100,000.
Okay.
But bear in mind, I mean, he had considerably more than that offered me over the years. I think he thought that if it didn't get accepted by the House of Lords, then obviously I would have lost and I would have had to pay Arsenal's costs, and that would have obviously bankrupted me.
That would have ruined you.
Yeah. But obviously, I mean, I had fought this all the way through. and had no intention of calling it a day.
So was the Arsenal's problem with what you were selling, was it based on you had the Arsenal badge, which they believe you were passing off as Arsenal stuff when it wasn't?
It was the badge, the Arsenal badge, the word Arsenal, and the Canon device.
Okay.
And obviously, they wanted to use that for themselves.
Mm.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, obviously, if I was Arsenal, and look, I mean, you can't blame them for wanting everything to themselves. That you can't blame. But the fact that people like me had developed the market.
Okay.
Yeah, when, well, like I say, when I first started, you could buy a bar scarf, a rosette, and a bobblehead. And we changed it. We went from a silk scarf to a printed scarf to a jacquard scarf to the Harvey Harvey scarf. I mean, there was so many things that we'd done that developed the market that they should have brought us on board and said, look, you know, well, we'll instead of using your own stuff, selling your own, why don't you sell our stuff?
Mm.
But that wasn't how they went about it. They just wanted to crush you. And at that time, there was people on at Arsenal on the board who were, you know, people like David Dean, who was just a greedy, greedy man, you know. He used to sit by the stall in his Rolls Royce, you know, looking at, watching us sell goods, you know. I mean,
okay.
it wasn't right.
So when did the case end, effectively? When did it?
2003.
2003,
yeah.
Wow. So you're looking at almost 13 years of...
Yeah. It went on beyond that. I mean, when the case finished, I went to Arsenal to clear my merchandise, you know, because nobody, I hadn't heard anything from the club or anything.
Okay.
Nothing was, as far as I was aware, nothing had been sort of finalised or anything. I went up there just to clear my stock, and the trading standards come round, confiscated the lot. And said that Arsenal would, yeah, sent them, and there was, I shouldn't be selling the stuff, which I only found out the following week.
And this was after you won the case?
No, this is after
you'd done the deal.
After I'd done the deal, yeah.
Okay.
And anyway, it went from there.
So the deal was to stop you from...
Yeah. But the thing is, the deal was to stop me from trading for them and for me to only sell a official Arsenal merchandise, okay, which they would sell me, which I agreed to, you know.
Okay.
But it, like I say, it hadn't been finalised as far as I was aware.
Yeah.
But obviously, it had been finalised by my solicitor, but okay, I hadn't been informed. Anyway, we'd done what we'd done, but they still wanted to get rid of me. There was a real bitter taste in their mouth, you know, but they hadn't actually killed me.
So
they just punished me, just injured me severely. Mm. Let's say,
but
let me finish up with a bit last time.
That's all right.
But so I was then we was working an Arsenal Celtic game, and the standards come round with someone from Arsenal and
again,
someone from Celtic.
Wow.
And I had a Celtic scarf hanging up. It was just, I had about 10 of them, like donkey's years.
Hmm.
And I stuck them up there, and the person from Celtic come around. I went, you're with the person from Arsenal. And said, oh, well, that's not official, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I got nicked for selling this Celtic thing. And I said, oh, really? I said, look, you've got the folks over the road there who, number one, haven't got a license. Number two, they're selling stuff with Arsenal on one end and Celtic on the other end. They're infringing both marks.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, but we can't do anything with them. They only give us the wrong name. I said, no. I said, that's what you're here for. I mean, they're... Anyway, they did nothing, and they took me to court. We won that. And then after I'd done that, about a year or so later, they came around again. And they looked on my badge ball and went, oh, that's not one of them. That's not one of them. I said, oh, look there. I said, I bought them from you. I said, I bought those from Arsenal. I've got the invoices and everything for them. they still nicked me. And I sent them copies of the invoice and everything, and they still nicked me. And it went on, it ran on, and it cost me about 40 grand. Cause
wow.
Like a bit, but they didn't nick me until the trading standards didn't nick me until this new law came in, which said that you couldn't claim your cost backs from the trading standards if you won the case. And anyway, they pushed it right to the last moment. And then when it was going to go to court for the final time, they dropped it. And I couldn't claim my cost back.
And when was this? This was post-2003 as well?
Oh, by me, about 2013.
Oh, wow. So pretty recently
from
there.
For all those years. And but I still ain't got me. I'm still trading.
So now is it Arsenal-only merchandise that you...
I had a deal with the Arsenal. And the guy... they said I could buy anything, and because when I had this meeting with the guys, I've forgotten, it will come to me tonight, but it's, I've got it written down there. But anyway, I had the meeting and he asked me what sold well, what didn't sell well, any other goods that we should sell, and I said that sell sells well, that one does, and I picked more down on these drawings that they had. And he said, anything else we should sell? I said, I'll tell you. I said, you should sell friendship scarves on European match days especially, I said, and on Premier League games as well. I said, but the European games, you must sell them on. He went, oh, right. And it was all friendly. And anyway, he started selling them on the European games. A massive success.
Mm.
And once they found it was a massive success, they wouldn't serve the traders anymore. They wanted them to themselves.
Which scarves are these?
These are the French scarves.
The 50-50 ones.
Yeah, 50-50 wow. ones.
Okay.
They weren't so popular on Premier League games.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on European games, I mean, I'll always remember one of the lads who used to work in the club shop. He said, Matt, he said, you're buying more scarves than we sell. And that's because they was probably afraid to buy as many as about. I think on one, on the Barcelona game, I think I've done about 500 scarves, you know, which was a lot of scarves for. And I think the club shop done about 300, you know. But obviously they thought, they were seeing me selling them, the guys, all the other guys selling them, and they thought, oh, well, we could sell all those. But they can't, because you go in a club shop on a match day, you can't get served, you know. It's especially on a game like Arsenal Celtic or Arsenal Barcelona or something.
Is the pricing the same for the scarves?
Yeah,
the pricing
is the same. So anyway, they stopped serving us, but obviously traders are a little bit sharp, and we done our unofficial one, which is what we do now.
And you know, you don't use the Arsenal logo.
We don't use the Arsenal crest. We just use our own initiative. And they sell. Yeah, obviously they don't sell as well as they would do if they had like the word Arsenal and the club,
of course, yeah,
crest on them. But because you can't get them from the club shop, then see, I mean, on match days, on normal Premier League match days, the club shop don't do them. Yeah, so the fans have no alternative.
So how many, like, of those scarves do you reckon you sell on an average match day?
It's impossible. To be honest, I mean, some days you set out an hour before kickoff, and I've got a lockup which is half full with ones that I haven't sold. I mean, yeah, some days you can't sell 20, and another day you'll sell 100. You know what I mean? It's never predictable, you know?
Are these scarves dated?
That's the problem. They're dated. I mean, the thing is, when we first did them, we never had to date them. But then, because I mean, I was the first one to do them. So, yeah, if people wouldn't have to come to me for this scarf,
so then you're not likely to sell them.
But obviously, people ain't stupid. When they see you're selling a few, they start doing it themselves. So then you start putting the date on them, and then once you do that, then you've got to sell out, because if you don't sell out, I mean, I've got a box a little box by the side of the stall, and it's like buy one for £3 and two for a fiver. You know what I mean? They're old ones, and you get people who sort through it and buy them. But I mean, they cost you more than that, you know what I mean?
Mm. Did the move from Highbury to the Emirates affect kind of the
it affected
traders?
My business, yeah. Because this council thing where you had the other traders involved, there were no stalls for traders. You know? I mean, my site is right on the corner of the North Bank and the West End. So I had a stall up. Yeah, you're there. And Highbury Hill was there, Gillespie Road there, and I'm on the corner. I've got that and that. I mean, it was
perfect location.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Perfect location. I used to smash it every game.
Yeah.
But then, although you did have a little bit of an issue when I first started doing it, because they always used to sell 5,000 tickets on the day. And they just happened to sell it in the North Bank. And the queue used to go right past my stall, so you had to ask people to get out of the way. But it was, it was a great location.
I'm assuming you get a lot of like tourists as well from abroad who have come for like first Arsenal game or just.
They're the biggest best buyers customer. Of the friendship scarf. Because it's their first game. Yeah. It's like me, if I go to Barcelona, I mean, I wouldn't buy a friendship scarf because of what I do. But I mean, I'd go in the club shop. I used to go and buy my boy a shirt from the away team or something, you know what I mean? But because people do like something to remember it by, don't they? But
it's interesting. It sounds chaotic at times.
Oh, mate, well, there's some. I mean, it's like every shop, I guess you see them putting things up for sale, or I'm quite sure they dump a lot of stuff, same as I do, you know what I mean? But we've had great times over the years where certain items have gone crazy. I mean, when I first done my first T-shirt, I'll always remember it was a Charlie Nicholas T-shirt and a guy called John Blight, if you watch this, John. He designed the shirt and I put it up for sale. I think we've done about 300 or something, and they went the first game, and I think done over 1,000 of these shirts, and I thought, blimey, this is the way forward. So we've done a few more shirts, and some of them sold, some of them didn't. And then I suppose the next big craze was the Halfy Halfy hat. I don't know if you remember that.
I've seen some of yours.
Absolutely massive. I mean, it weren't half and half. It was like two-thirds Arsenal. And at first, another team. It would be Celtic, Rangers. Might have been England. Might have been the Union Jack. But we did just about every team. Yeah, I mean, like Juventus, Inter Milan, Dundee United, you name it, we did it. And they used to fly out. I mean, we would do 200-400 a game.
What do you think is going to be the next item?
Who knows? If I knew, I'd have it out now. Funny, you mentioned the inflatables. They never caught one at our house.
That was mainly at City, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, City, and there was the other one, the Cods.
I think it was Grimsby. They had big inflatables.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, Man City had bananas, didn't they?
Yeah, that was it.
The Banana Army.
Banana Army.
Because we did a badge with Banana Army on it when Man City come down.
They wouldn't let them in these days. That's the thing. You wouldn't have
inflatables. Yeah, no, there's no way. No way. Listen, some people seem to get flares in, but you wouldn't get in with an inflatable, that's for sure. Well, Matt, thanks for joining us today. Julian, do you have any remaining questions? I think I've learned a lot today.
Yeah, always fun. My main question is, can I pick up some of those old scarves that you want to chuck out?
Mate, you can come and pick up as many as you like. I mean, I've got hundreds of them. As long as you pay me euros.
Well, thank you for watching. This has been the Marble Halls podcast. We'll see you again soon.